What's up, podcast? This is Dan. This is the episode 71 with Dan Burton. This was great because we were at a little jazz cafe in Worcester, and there's a little room that they set up at the back. We had biscuits, we had coffee. It was just really great chatting with Dan, hearing his experiences, going through university, struggling with his mental health somewhat, becoming a poet, becoming an author as well. Really that rise, starting from the very bottom, starting to get up in front of people and speak about quite emotional topics. I just think you'll get a lot out of this, how to get out of a rut, with writer's block. There's a lot in here, like how to start if you want to start being a poet, talking about your emotions and feelings and vulnerability as a man as well. So there's lots of interesting topics here. I hope you get a lot out of it. I really loved this episode. Dan is such a great guy, and I just know that you'll see it from, hearing him. You'll just love it. So enjoy the episode. Please, if you can, go on to whichever platform you're using and leave a review and subscribe. It'd really help getting the podcast out there, more people listening and, hopefully helping people. I got a message from a lovely lady this morning to say that, the podcast has really helped her understand what's going on with her own mental health. She wanted to thank me for all the tips and advice, and, I had to learn that from someone, so I'm just really passing on the knowledge, and, I want you to do that as well. And you can do that by subscribing and also sharing, sharing the links. It'd really, really help. I appreciate your love and support as always. It means a lot. I do mean this from the bottom of my heart, so thank you. So enjoy the show. Good afternoon. Welcome to Know Yourself, and I'm here with Dan Burton. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Dan. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. It's really lucky today because we've actually got a face-to-face interview, which is always always really nice to have. So, yeah, just really appreciate you coming down. We're actually here in Worcester at the Paradiddles. What would you call it?
It's Paradiddles Music Cafe, I think, to give it its proper title.
Yeah.
It's just not too far from the Commandery. Just off near City Walls Road, so really good location. It's actually where I had the launch of my poetry book, so I just love it.
That's amazing. Yeah, so I mean, we're here in this room. We've got a great setup. We've got chocolate fingers.
Are prepped.
We're well and truly prepped. So we were chatting a little bit beforehand, and what we usually do at the start of an episode is we say, let's hear a little bit about your chapter one. Mm. So, if you're writing a book, you actually have written a book.
Yep. Several of them.
So for those of you at home that don't know who Dan is, he's an author. He's also got a bit of a background in journalism, and he's a poet, and he also runs his own copywriting and editing company. So, yeah, basically, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sweet, okay. So I'm originally from Leicester, mm-hmm. and moved down to Worcester in 2017. And, when you walk around a city and you just know you're in the right place?
Yeah.
I had that. I saw a friend at the start of 2017, and I was just walking around the city of Worcester, and I was like, I can see myself here. And I was already thinking, I want to move out, stand on my own 2 feet, really take my editing work to the next level and everything.
Mm.
And I've just not looked back since, really. Really settled well in Worcester. Really found my feet with the poetry scene as well, which I just love the poetry scene here. It's fantastic. It's given me a lot, both personally and professionally, in inverted commas.
Yeah,
And then, that's kind of where it all sort of came from. Went to university in Coventry as well. I graduated in 2015, like you say, from journalism. Mm-hmm. And again, look back on those 3 years with a lot of fondness, actually. They taught me a lot about the professional side, but also about who I am as a person.
Yeah.
And crucially, met some really awesome people. So that's kind of how I came to be here, really. Yeah. I lived in Leicester for about 10 years as well, so...
Okay, Leicester.
I say I'm pretty much a full Leicesterian, if that's even the right word. No, Leicester's always got a special place in my heart, always will.
Mm. So, where did it start with poetry for you? Because, you know, it's not always, like, the most, like, striking thing, mm. you know, where people will be like, yeah, I want to be a poet, you know. It's one of those, like, almost, like, subtle genres of, like, you know, the literature world,
mm.
for example. So how did you get into it, for example?
So everyone always asks, oh, how long have you been writing poetry for? Mm. And that in itself is a story, because on a technicality, I've been writing poetry since 2013. However, I had a big gap of about 4 years from 2013 to about 2017 when I moved down to Worcester. And I started writing poetry at university when my mental health wasn't great. I was in a very, very bad spot with my mental health. And I found poetry was one way, and probably the most effective way for me at the time, of just getting down all of these emotions, all of these feelings, which, let's just say, weren't exactly great. They weren't healthy for me. They were really, really quite negative. And I just found it as a big outlet. And then I sort of left the poetry to focus on my novel writing. Heartbound, my debut novel, came out in 2015, literally the second day of 2015. It was on Amazon. So
literally January the 2nd.
Yeah, I'm not kidding. It was there. So I was focusing on that style of writing on my novels. And then when I came down to Worcester, I came to the Literary Festival, which is Worcestershire Lit Fest and Fringe, to give it its full title.
Yeah.
And I was just hooked from there. And, you know, just seeing the performances, I was like, wow, this is amazing. And then I went to a few of the events, a few of the open mic nights, and thought, you know what, I'm going to get back into it. I want to start my poetry back up again. So I went back to the poems I'd written in 2013.
Wow.
That was like stepping into a time warp. It was, to revisit those poems was hard, I won't lie. But then I was like, comparing where I was at the time of 2013 to 2017, I was like, I really want to take this forward. And again, I've just not looked back since with poetry. And Dark Nights Into Brighter Days, which is my debut collection, came out in June of 2018. So, like, right at the end of June 2018. So,
big year.
Big year. A very big year. And it's still, you know, I've been performing poems from that collection since the launch tour.
Yeah.
As well, which went from Worcester to Leicester again, and then to Coventry again. So I was taking in these cities that had all had a significant impact in getting the collection together in some way, shape or form. So yeah, that's how the poetry all sort of came about. And I'm still pushing further with it. You know, I've got work in the pipeline. I'm always writing poetry, always performing poetry. And
yes.
Still going.
What did it feel like to... Yeah, you know, go to these cities where they've had like a real big impact on your life. They've really left an impression. Like, I can tell, like, the way you were smiling and the sort of like glint in your eye when you're talking about Leicester, so it had a real impact on you. What did it feel like going back to these cities and then like delivering your poetry? Because presumably you would have had some sort of like place that you went to you know, perform.
Yeah. So Leicester, the Leicester leg, was in a town called Loughborough. Which was about, you know, 10 minute drive from where I'd lived before moving down to Worcester. And it was just phenomenal to stand on a stage and deliver something so personal in a city that, or a county that has basically raised me and made me who I am in a lot of senses.
Mm-hmm.
It was, it's such an incredible feeling. It really stays with you, and I was absolutely buzzing for weeks afterwards. And the same with Coventry. It was the city where things really went south, so to speak, that I really struggled. But again, going back and delivering a set of poems and short stories about the journey that I've been on, it was like going back to the start of the cycle and looking at it with a different viewpoint, almost like, this is where I've come from and this is where I'm going, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And it was just good to look back and, you know, compare how I'd felt at certain times at university.
Yeah.
To the Coventry leg at the start of August, and just it was night and day, the difference. I was just so blown away by it all. And the other poets that I had as well on the tour, I had different poets performing alongside me as well. All of them were blinking amazing. I was just so grateful for them all. One of them even did all three legs. She did the Worcester leg, she did the Leicester leg, and the Coventry leg. Yeah. And, you know, it just really showed me how much poetry has given me, and the poetry scene on the whole.
It's great that you were able to go back, like, to Coventry. So, you know, you've had this real difficult patch in your life, and it's great that you're able to go back, you know, go back and almost, like, stand up, you know, wherever you are, and to be able to, like, talk about those things that was such a hard, you know, it was such a hard time for you in your life, and to be able to talk to it, like, in the area where it's actually happening for you. It's kind of, like, almost come full circle. It's like you facing your demons, almost.
Yeah.
It's got, like... It's almost like like poetry.
Yeah, it is exactly that. That was why I wanted to have a Coventry leg, and there was a time in the sort of build up to it where I was thinking, am I actually ready to do this leg? And for the first time, there was a moment. I think I was driving into Coventry for something else. I think I'd had to take a different route to get to work or something. And I was asking myself, am I ready to do a Coventry leg? And for the first time, the answer was no. I thought to myself, I'm not ready. Ooh. And then I sort of drove on a little bit further and I was like, you know what, actually, no, I am ready, because, you know, I've not been back for an extended period of time since I graduated.
Yeah.
I'd been sort of through it, in a sense, like sort of skirted the roads around it, and... there was one time where I spent maybe an hour or so at an event, but I'd never been there for a long period of time since my graduation. And I was like, I can't keep putting this off. I can't keep running from that moment.
Yeah.
So you know what? I'm going to do it. I've got my poetry, and I have a really supportive group of friends who, even if they're not in the same city, they've got my back. I know full well they have. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to do this, and it's going to be a fantastic performance. Plus, my mum's coming to the Coventry leg, so I can't cancel it now. so it was special. It was really special. And I didn't tell myself as such. It was like a pep talk. It was like, we can do this. We're going to do this. Let's go. You know, just kind of really G-ing myself up.
Yeah.
Without, you know, giving myself too much of a hard time. It was just kind of encouragement and motivation, and I'm so glad I did not take that leg out.
So the feeling afterwards was like complete, like, you know, overwhelming in sense of like achievement.
Oh, absolutely. And it was like I sort of introduced my final poem of the Coventry leg, and it was like, I've actually done this. I've done a launch tour for a really emotional set of poetry, a really emotional poetry book. Wow, you know, I was just so overwhelmed by it, but it was absolutely fantastic.
Gosh, did you have on the tour? Did you have like other poets turn up and like, you know, seek out your work, and they wanted to hear you, you know, tell and talk about your poetry?
Yeah, there were other poets in there, particularly on the Worcester launch. Wow. You know, they were all talking about, you know, they'd obviously heard a few of the poems before the collection came out, but they were still talking about it, really wanting to find out more about how the poems came about. And that to me was so special, for someone to come up and say, I really enjoyed this particular poem, or I really felt a connection with this particular short story or poem.
Yeah.
That to me is quite special, because it's like, that's what I want to get from Brighter Days, to give it a shortened title. I want to show people that they aren't alone out there, and that if they can connect with that poetry and it helps them in some way, even if it's just saying, oh my gosh, there's someone there who has been through this as well. That to me is the special moment, as well as getting up on a stage and delivering the actual performance itself. It's having someone come up and say, I really connected with that, it was really lovely, or whatever it is they say, that stays in my heart. That yeah, really does.
It like resonated with me. It's really powerful when, I mean, I was lucky enough to see you Litfest.
That was the mental health day. Yeah, that was the...
That was about 3-4 weeks ago.
Yeah, start of October.
Gosh, that went quick.
Yeah. Very quick. 10th of October, I believe it was.
Yeah. I was lucky enough to see you. And I remember distinctly feeling touched at one particular point. And there was a lot of really great poets there as well, and you really just see all different shapes and sizes in life when you go to something like that. And if you really want to feel empathy for someone, I think poetry is like a really great way of like how much closer can you get to someone than hearing their poetry.
Absolutely.
I'm no expert, like the only stuff I know about poetry is like from school, so I don't know a great deal, but like that's genuinely what I felt when I was there, was gosh, how much closer can you get to someone than like hearing this sort of stuff?
Yeah,
it's really quite powerful.
Yeah, it really is. And I like going to events even as an audience member, because you could just sit back, enjoy and feel the emotion that they put in. And some of the performances that I've seen, they do bring a tear to your eye, and you, those are the special ones. I mean, every poetry performance I see is special in its own right, but when it really tugs at your heartstrings and brings a tear to your eye, it's like, wow, you know, you can't beat that feeling, I don't think.
No. And it's interesting with yours, when I was listening to your poetry, I almost went into like a trance-like state where I was
really?
Just like, I felt, I was just like, I was really captured in what you were saying. And then there was another guy from Birmingham.
Yes.
And I can't remember his name.
Wesley Rolston.
That's it, yeah. Wesley. He had a really captivating performance, because he's actually doing drama, isn't he, at uni. And oh my God, like his performance, it was just strikingly different. I was still like encapsulated by it, but like in such a different way. Like his was like a performance as well, and then with yours I was actually like engrossed in what you were saying, and there's just so many different things going on.
It was such a special day, wasn't it?
Yeah,
that one's sort of ingrained in my head. And I actually went to the one last year's mental health awareness event that Litfest do. And that was another one that kind of really ignited the fire. It was burning. I was really keen to get involved and perform at open mic nights. But then that event was like, hello, it was like a firework, you know, it was like, let's really do this, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's events like that really are so keen. Like you say, you can really connect with people's journeys, can't you?
How important would you say it is? Because like, I was in that room and I was imagining, you know, like I was you or another poet, for example. Like, it must be really powerful being around so many like-minded people. Yes,
absolutely. Like, it is almost like a family. It sounds a bit cliche, but it really is. Yeah. And when you just see so many people who share your passion for poetry, performing, writing, it is absolutely mind-blowing how incredible that is. You know, people will, like, we all share each other's work. You know, a few of my friends critique my work and vice versa. Like, we all help each other.
Brilliant.
And that is what makes it so special. We are so closely knit, I think, here.
Yeah. What would you say to someone? So, you know, say we've got someone young listening, or even someone who's, like, you know, a bit more seasoned in life, a bit more experience, and they have kind of thought about poetry before, or they enjoy it, but they've never taken any thought to writing anything down. Like, what would you say for someone who's kind of like toying with the idea of starting, or doesn't really know what to do, or, you know, how to start? Like, what would you say for someone like that?
I'd say to them, get a notepad and jot down what you're feeling. Mm. And you might just find they tend to sort of form on their own merit. And I'd also say as well, don't focus on the technical stuff. Don't pay too much attention or as much attention to worrying about rhyming and structure and all of this kind of stuff. Just get it down and write. If you've got the rhythm and it feels right, that's all you need to do. And just keep honing your craft, keep performing, keep writing, and eventually it kind of forms on its own merit. And don't hide away from it. Embrace it, sit with it, and try and write on a regular basis, which is the advice most writers give. But it is very true. Try and write on a regular basis. If there's something going on in your life that you're maybe struggling with, or even that you're really enjoying and embracing, get it down, get down some words to start with, and then just see where they take you, see where they take you on that journey. Like, there were a few from the 2013 collection, so to speak, when I was at university. None of them, apart from actually maybe one, is in Brighter Days.
Oh, okay.
But in a bit of an edited version, I went back to it and edited it. But, you know, there were some that were just basically, I wrote down what was in my heart and mind at the time, and then just sort of left them, and then went back and looked at them again.
Fresh eyes,
fresh mind, and then I sort of learned from there again and picked it all back up, but while still with a bit more of a goal in mind, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
My goal was basically enjoy the poetry and try and get out and perform some. So, that's what I'd say to them.
It's really interesting. Like, I've now got proper empathy for you. I can feel it in myself. Like, I understand why people would find poetry attractive now. It's that catharticism. I think that's the word.
I'll give you that.
It's cathartic. There
yes.
You go. But to write, it's kind of like journaling, you know.
Yeah.
It's like writing all those thoughts and feelings down. But, like, a journal you might keep to yourself, whereas with the poetry, you're sharing it with someone, and you can also watch the way that they play off it and, like, their reaction. Like, I can see it now.
Mm.
It's interesting. And, yeah, thanks for giving me that, because, like, I can almost Absolutely. See a little bit through your eyes now.
Yeah. And even if you just want to keep those poems to yourself, you don't have to share them if you don't feel comfortable with doing so. As long as they are special to you and they help you, the rest follows on its own. And for me, it was, I just got a real buzz out of performing, so it just followed on naturally from the writing. And like I say, the community here is just so, so supportive. Can't fault them enough.
What was it like the first time, like, getting up on stage?
Oh gosh. I actually remember that. I actually remember that performance. I've printed out a poem about my friends, actually, who have been a real inspiration for me as well. My hands were shaking so much, and I was like, I was so worried that I was tripping over myself, that I was not making any sense whatsoever. But then a few of the poets, you know, they congratulated me and said, oh, you did really, really well. And then said, next time, let's try, you know, just try and take a deep breath before you go on. Slow it down. Really think about your words. Really focus on them.
Mm.
And that advice has been so crucial in my development. Because when I'm anxious, I have a tendency to talk really rapidly. So obviously, being on my first performance, it was probably like all done in one big breath, probably. But now I've sort of learned, you know, to slow things down and really deliver, if you know what I mean, instead of just trying to race through the poem because you're anxious and scared of the audience, which you should never be scared of the audience. They will congratulate you just for going up. I just learned how to slow things down, hone my craft and style. And like I say, it's just gone from there. Really?
Amazing. Because, like, most people, if they wrote out, like, a list from, like, 1 to 5, like, public speaking would be, like, right up there. Like, of things that'd be, like, afraid, like immediately afraid of doing. So like, it's like a really big thing, especially like, you know, you said that you suffer with anxiety. Like, that's like no like little thing. Like, that's like, you know, your heartbeat's already racing because of a certain situation or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I know for me, like, it feels like I've got like electricity in my veins.
Yes. Yeah, I have a similar sort of thing. I get the pins and needles all sort of down my left.
Really?
Sort of from my little finger down towards like my elbow. So that's a little warning sign that the anxiety goes up. And also my back. I play badminton as well, and I had bad problems with my back at one stage.
Oh, right.
I've learned that there is a difference between a badminton back flare, so to speak, and my anxiety. The badminton one tends to be on the left-hand side. The anxiety tends to be on the right, closer to my spine.
Interesting.
So I've noticed these sort of little things that my body's telling me, and try to manage them in the best way that I can. And it's funny when people always say, oh, it must be so nerve-wracking. And it is, to perform poetry. Of course it is. But I think the hardest part is the walk up to the stage to deliver your set. And for me, the instant I say the title of my first poem, completely relaxed.
Really?
It completely switches. You know, I'll say a few jokes in my introduction. But then when I say my first title, it's like, whoo, composed. Let's do this. It's quite serene.
Yeah.
And actually, that experience as well is quite special.
It's kind of like, it reminds me of like a ship, like in the storm, where like the waves are all crashing against it. And then when you start, it's like a little boat being in the middle of a lake and everything's still and calm.
Absolutely. That's exactly that sensation. Absolutely.
It's interesting because like, it's always like for me, the first 5 minutes of the podcast, like I'm always like really like, oh, like, I know I look calm and collected, but on the inside I'm like, Jesus. So like, it's really interesting for you how like it's the title and then it's like,
yeah,
it's just different people have different like ways of settling in. Mine's like really gradual. I start off really nervous and then as I get the first few questions in and I start to feel like my groove and my vibe with the person, it kind of just goes.
Yeah.
Settles down.
Yeah. And you tend to pick that up for me, and the poetry, you get that vibe off the audience as well. And you kind of tap into their energy as well. You know, you can deliver a poem in a certain way depending on your audience's reactions and emotions that they're going through.
Interesting.
So yeah.
So it's a sense of like ad-libbing to the context of the room almost.
Yes, yeah, you sort of pick up on, you know, how engaged they are with the first poem, for example, and then you just sort of deliver accordingly, basically, I think. But for me, I go through my set list the night before, and if it doesn't feel right, I will change it. And I've been known to have a backup set ready just in case I start to struggle, as in, are my poems going to be too much for me to handle? So I've got my set list already, which, because obviously a lot of my poem is about my mental health.
Sure.
And if I'm going in too deep to things and I'm really thinking, oh my gosh, I'm putting myself at risk here, I'll then switch. And I'm not afraid to do that.
So I imagine it's like, it's being up on stage, like doing your poetry, especially with mental health, it's kind of like opening a filing cabinet and like, you know, getting all these like folders out and like dumping it on like a table, and like that can be quite a draining experience, I imagine. Yeah,
absolutely. There is actually a poem called When I Drown in Brighter Days, which is about exactly that overwhelming energy crash. And it was funny, the friend that I did an event with in Malvern the other week, we were literally parked next door to the place we were performing. She looked at me and she went, "You're sleepy, aren't you?" I was like, She could tell, because she knows. She knew that it was going to take a lot out of me, and it does, just because of how much you put into it. But it's also that sense of, we did it. We really did it. You know, it's pride as well. It's a real good sense of achievement, as well as being emotionally tiring. So it's an interesting combination.
Yeah, because you're like, you're high and low at the same time.
Yeah, you're high on, you know, the back of the performance, and then you're just absolutely zonked. You know, you just want to go back to bed and kind of sleep it off in a way. But then I sort of get in and I lie back after each performance and I think, that was bloody awesome. And I was even, there was one that I went to and I did a fairly new poem that I'd written and it didn't feel right and I was quite upset with myself. I was like, oh my God, I've really ballsed up that poem. I tripped over something in stanza three. So I was a bit upset with myself. And then I drove back to my house and I sort of got coming out of Worcester and I was like, actually, no, I did smash it. I delivered great poem that was quite special to me, and you know what, the audience loved it. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
And you know, it just kind of turned everything around. I got that sensation again of, you know, I did it, we did it, you know. It's a great feeling. Can't beat it, I don't think.
No, it's interesting. Like I feel the same about podcasting, which is why I kind of assumed it would have been the same with a little bit the same with feeling with poetry, like getting up on stage and like delivering, you know, a poem that's really deep and like personal to yourself. It's kind of like this, like after recording an episode, I'm a little bit like, oh, you know, that was deep, or like, oh, that was like a really good conversation. And I get that kind of natural dip, but I'm also like, that was amazing, because I got to do what I love. I got to do what fires me up. And it's really interesting. You have to like audit it at first and like keep track of it, because it's really confusing to be tired out by something, because you get the feelings that are associated with being tired. Like sometimes you get sad when you're tired. Sometimes you get like, you know, angry because like you're ratty or whatever. And sometimes you can associate those things to the thing that you love. Like I've had times where I've done a podcast episode and afterwards I've been like, oh, I just really feel down, sort of thing. And it's not because of the podcast episode. It's because of the feelings that are attributed by the side effects of doing it. Mm. Like, because it can be quite deep and intense.
Mm.
And it's learning to like, yeah, unpick all of that, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I give myself at least 5 to 10 minutes just still. After each performance, I just sit back, take a deep breath. And if I'm at home, for example, when I get back home, I sort of just sit back, replay it in my head, and just think, that was another fantastic experience. Even if I mess up a poem, just say, you did it. The fact is, you've gone up, you've pushed anxiety back for 5 minutes or however long the set is, and he smashed it. And it was funny that the same poem, actually, When I Drown, one of my recent performances, I had that emotional crash, that emotional dip, before I went on.
Ooh.
And that was, it came out of absolutely nowhere. I couldn't have prepared, because I was literally just walking into the venue where the night was taking place, and I was like, where's this come from? And I was trying to replay myself, doing everything I could to try and get the energy back up.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't happening. I was like, oh my gosh, what's going on? For the first time since I'd moved down and started performing, I was like, am I actually fit enough, in a sense, to perform?
Mm.
And for the first time, I was like, I'm actually not sure here. So I sat back again, got some air, stood outside for a minute, went back in, and fortunately I think I was about third or fourth on, so I had a bit of time to build myself up. And the set that I had in mind was not the set that came out, because I put in When I Drown. I wasn't going to perform When I Drown on that night, but because of what I was feeling.
It really resonated with what you were feeling.
Absolutely, and I thought the best thing for me to do is get this emotion out in a performance. So out came When I Drown. So it was curious how that happened. And afterwards, again, I was in a massive daze. It felt like I'd just been knocked from behind. But that was probably more significant in many ways, because that was the one time I potentially could have backed out, because I wasn't feeling right. But the fact is, I still went up and did it. And I was so proud of myself for that. Even though, you know, I'd performed When I Drowned so many times, and the one after it I'd performed as well a few times. And so I was just so proud of myself for getting up there, pushing back the anxiety again when it was really strong.
Yeah.
And put on a great show, I thought.
I love that because I really like that. I like that because I always used to hide away. Like, if I had something going on for me in my head, like, you know, I was, like, down on myself, like, or I was in some sort of, like, crisis in my own head, you know, some conflict about something that I'm working through, I'd just go quiet on everything. Like, you know, I'd stop posting, I'd stop podcasting, or everything. Because I felt as though I couldn't share my vulnerability. And actually, like, for me, that's where the gold is in terms of helping other people. So, like, I made a decision, like, kind of about 2 or 3 months ago, that when I'm feeling like that, I'll actually share it.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, me, like, working through, like, a crisis, or me, like, talking through my process of, like, what I do in a conflict, or what I do when I'm feeling crap, can actually, like, really help someone in a tough spot.
Yeah.
And, like, that was, like, a really interesting point, because actually some of the most, I would say some of the most valuable stuff is when I've actually just gone face-to-face with a camera for Instagram or whatever, and just done, like, a one-minute video and gone, this is what I'm feeling right now, blah, 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 blah. And then got it out, and actually that's been the most valuable stuff for people, and like people have been like, oh, look, I really appreciate you sharing that, because that's actually what's going on for me now. Or, and what I'm trying to say is I really value that, and it's a really interesting point that in the face of adversity, it's actually at that low point when you do it, it's actually going to be better than your normal stuff.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly that. And I'm the same. I, you know, if I feel like I'm in a sort of bad rut, I'm working better at putting things out and saying, you know what, I'm not okay at the moment. I am actually really struggling. I'm getting better, I think, at saying it. Even if it's just in a private message to someone. I did put something out on Twitter fairly recently, just saying my anxiety is basically an overdrive. And I'm really struggling, and I was quite fortunate that, because I work from home quite a lot, I could just sit outside, and it was quite funny, I just sort of lay back outside for a bit, felt the sort of wind sort of going across my arms sort of thing, which is always a great calming influence, and then the dog comes up and investigates my hand, and I'm like, oh, hello, hello, dog, but that was actually quite nice in a way, it was, and then I put that out on Twitter, and the response back, again, like you say, it was really valuable, and it gives me a sense of pride that I got through it, through my own stuff, but also that I'm speaking to people who are in a similar situation. That's what Brighter Days aims to do, is just show, you know, because a lot of them were written when I was in low places, in fact, probably all of them, and so it's good to, like you say, get it out and share and help people through the tough times that they're in.
I think it's so important, because like one of the things that I felt before I started going to therapy, because I kind of had like 4 years between, like, I would say when I developed like PTSD to actually being like, you know, in therapy and sat with someone talking about it, those 4 years, like, I literally like thought I was alone, like that everyone else was fine, and like no one had any like mental health problems or anything, and it was just me. I didn't even know what was going on. I just thought like I was broke, and like that was it. This was it for the rest of my life. So stuff like what you put out and stuff like what I put out, I really feel passionate about it, because I don't want people to feel like they're alone, and I don't want, I don't know, I guess it's like, you know, part of it is me wanting to help myself when I was going through that 4-year patch. And I guess that is what part of the reason why I do this. But it's also because I think about it, and it doesn't matter who they are or, you know, what colour they are or anything. Like, if I was to think of anyone between the age 16 and 20 going through that, it would, like, it breaks my heart. Mm. So that's, you know, that's why I
Absolutely, it does. And my journey through mental health dates back to my teenage years. Mm. It really, when it really hit a crisis point in my second year of university.
Oh, really?
You know, I put myself in hospital at one point. And that was frightening. That was very frightening. Mm-hmm. But then I look back on it and think, I don't want people to be in that same situation or feel like the only way out of that situation is by doing something like that, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm the same with you. It breaks my heart when we hear about so many young people being affected by mental health for whatever reason, and they're just not being able to access the support. I was quite fortunate that I spoke to my university, spoke to my lecturers, who were really, really good and supportive.
Oh, great.
And also a really great friendship group, both in Coventry and in Leicester, and of course my family as well. So they really did. There's a line in one of the poems, not in Brighter Days actually, but about my friends, that says, "You held me up strong as sapphire," and that's how they kind of lifted me up.
Yeah.
So I just hope that other people of similar ages to myself can get that help, and crucially not be ashamed of it. You know, it's strength to ask for help, I think.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, it's kind of like what we were talking about posting or like just talking when you've got stuff going on. Like, my head's like, no, I can't let people know that I'm weak or I'm like, I've got something going on. Like, that's why I find it really hard to share. Like, there's that, like, barrier that I always have to break through. Sometimes it's really easy, and I can just go bash, like, you know, talk about it. And then it's weird. I can talk about stuff that's happened. Mm. I find it really tough to talk about things that are happening. Mm. It's difficult. Mm. And I don't know what it's like for women, because I'm not a woman. But, like, I know for dudes that they find it hard, because there's, like, this, you know, there's this, I don't know, like...
It's a stereotypical, you must be okay sort of thing, isn't it? Yeah. You know, you've got to be strong, you've got to just power on through it, and that is just absolute rubbish, basically, you know? We're all human and we all have emotions. We all break when we fall, I think. Mm. And it's just how we need to help each other put ourselves back together, I think. Regardless of gender, age, ethnic origin, I just really think everyone should pull together and really help each other. And that's what I felt here in Worcester, and at the times where I was at a complete crisis point, I really felt that. I just hope that people in a similar situation can experience that as well, experience that camaraderie almost, you know, of people pulling together, even if it's just saying, let's go for a walk to Costa or whatever and get a drink.
Yeah.
That in itself is showing that they're here for you, that they want to help you through it. Even if it's just, like I say, going to get a coffee and chatting about random rubbish, you know, even that sort of stuff's so powerful.
Yeah.
So powerful.
Completely agree. Like, it's like that thing where you see someone fall over in the street, your immediate reaction is to, like, go like, oh, you're right, and help them up.
Mm.
And, like, it's the same with mental health, but people don't talk about that.
Mm.
It's interesting, like, when I was at the Lit Fest, actually, and, like, I was talking to the people, there was two women at the Time for Change stand.
Yeah.
And, like, as soon as you start talking, like, people want to, you know, people have got, like, something that's happened in their life, or if they haven't, they know someone who has. And, like we were just talking, and then naturally other people started chipping in. And, like, once the conversation starts, like, people genuinely want to talk about it, and they're okay with it. Like, once they feel like there's a certain connection there, they'll, you know, they'll share. And I genuinely feel like because of the movement online, like, you're part of that community as well, I know, like,
yeah.
It's only ever going one way in my mind, it's never going backwards now, it's just going to get more and more transparent as time goes on.
Really hope so, I really, really hope so. I can see it happening, I just really hope it carries on pushing forward like that, and similar to what you're doing as well, you know, getting people talking and sharing their experiences, that is thinking amazing, you know, and we need to do more of it.
Yeah, like, I just... I like the fact that someone can hear a story like yours, for example, and go, they can naturally gonna pick out the parts that resonate with you and then distribute, or like, sorry, put to one side, like, the things that don't. And that's why I like a collection of interviews, because you can hear lots of different stories. And like, even now, like, you know, I'll interview someone like today, like, it doesn't matter how many conversations you have, like, today I learned about empathy for, like, poetry, for example, like, you know, I've learned, you know, like say, camaraderie, like, having that close-knit group of friends together, you just, each conversation you take away something different, and that's the hope with this, that people listen and they're like, okay, I got that from that episode, I got that from that episode, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. I think just how powerful stories are, and the importance of sharing them, and yeah, like you say, learning from them and resonating with them is just so, so powerful, isn't it?
So going back to your poetry, so I've got a couple of questions that were kind of flying around earlier on. I want to ask you them before I forget, because I'll be gutted if I don't.
Far away.
So, like, as a writer, you know, that's naturally a hyper-creative process. Have you ever encountered writer's block?
Yeah.
And how do you power on through that?
Simply by doing that. I say this to my the clients that I work with for my editing. I actually give them a little bit of advice that I give myself. Try and write something a bit different. So let's say you're writing a 70,000 word paranormal fiction story, which is what I write, paranormal fiction. Try and write a blog post on crystals, for example, which is what I've done recently. You know, just try and get the juices flowing again in a different way. And you might just find that it starts to come back in a different area with the novel. The second trick that I use is go to a bookshop and just walk around the books. Don't have to go in and buy anything. Just walk around the books. Start off with the genre that you're associated with, that you really enjoy both reading and or writing.
So for you, it'd be paranormal fiction.
Yeah, for me, it'd be paranormal or horror. Go back and have a little wander around. And then just think, I'm going to be here one day. I will be here one day. It won't be tomorrow. It probably won't be this year. Hell, it might not even be in 3 years. But I will get there.
Yeah.
And that, it just gets the juices going again. And I also find going to a special place, ideally sort of outside in a natural, an area of natural beauty works for me. But a special place in your heart for whatever reason, just sort of sit there and think about why that's so special to you. What's the story behind that place? For me, there's a couple. There's one in Worcester, which is Worcester Woods, the natural park.
Is that the Wildwood Country Park?
Yeah. I just sort of go up there and have a little wander around. You know, and that helps get the juices back flowing again. There's also a place called Watermead in Leicestershire, which is a vast open area of lakes, woodland, and it's basically so beautiful. And it actually featured in one of my earlier novels, which I didn't bring out because I worked on something else at the time. But, you know, I just sort of sat there and thought, I love this place. And then the creativity just kind of came back again. So that's how I get through writers. But and also talking to people saying, oh, I'm really struggling to get these 500 words done or whatever. Just say, you know, I'm finding it a bit hard. Have you got any advice? And just get talking about it, basically.
Yeah, like reaching out and saying, because naturally their next question is going to be like, well, why? And then you can go like, well, you know, this happened this week and it's just distracting me. And that's so valuable. That's really interesting. Yeah.
And also, don't beat yourself up. You know, it's not going to be there all the time. If it's not there, don't force it as well. If the creativity isn't there, it will have an off day. But if you just try a little bit, try and encourage it. Just like, okay, let's try and do 200 words and see where we're at. Mm. If you can only do 100, you can only do 100. If you can only do 10, that's absolutely fine. Just step back from it. Do something else. Try again another day when you're fresh. That's my main advice for writer's block.
Amazing. Yeah, because like, I feel like you ask any writer like what the biggest like pain in the ass is, you know, it might be like, you know, writing, doing a certain word count, that sort of thing. But like, definitely up there is going to be like writer's block.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Everyone will go through it. Some people say it's a myth, but I've gone through it at several different points when you're just staring at the screen and thinking, nah, it's not there. And that's where, you know, I've just sort of step back and think, okay, let's leave it for now. It's still going to be there tomorrow. Let's try again with fresh eyes and fresh coffee.
Yeah, I've experienced it before with the podcast. Because like before I started doing more interviews, a lot of my stuff was, you know, very off the cuff from my own experience. You know, I'd kind of look inside myself and try and look for a theme, and I'd be like, okay, I can do an episode on that. Like, once I've got like a few different things in my head, I can do like a 10-15 minutes episode off that very easily. I found that I was like struggling. I got to a point where I was just like, I don't remember what it's like to feel anxious anymore. I don't remember what it's like to, you know, when my PTSD kicks in. It was a really weird thing, because I was, to some extent, I still live through and have PTSD, but it's at a lesser degree than I've ever had before because of the therapy.
That's good to know that, you know, it's helping you. That's a good thing as well.
Yeah, like, it went from being, like, a really big feature of, like, my life, like, that it was there like a massive balloon, and it was like pushing everything else outside of my head, to being like, well, it's just this little thing in a box in a corner now, and like I open it up every now and then and go, you're right in there, and then shut the lid. Like, yeah, you don't cure it, you just manage it.
Absolutely.
You just like, you push it down into like a manageable like portion of like food, as it were, and like, you know, you address that when, as and when you need to. And I can't remember where I was going with that, but
oh, make it manageable.
Like I say, I was finding it hard to even like tap into that, because I was like distracted with other things. So it can happen in like many different guises, like writing, because like writing can take many forms, like blogs, poetry, you know, like if you're a screenwriter, you know, that sort of thing. So yeah, it was just a really interesting question, and you actually gave like a phenomenal answer as well.
I try.
You did really well.
Thank you.
So I've got to be conscious of the time, because we've only got the room for a little bit. So how I usually close out the show these days is I ask someone, what's quirky or interesting about yourself that other people might not know about you?
Oh, good one. Oh, that's an interesting one. I suppose my main quirky fact, so to speak, is that I read the tarot cards.
Oh,
yeah, just going to throw that one out there.
We're at a table as well.
Here they are. Oh, damn, wish I bought them. I've got two decks at home. I have actually got a deck that I carry around with me a lot of the time. And I just love how you can interpret the cards in practically any way you want. Obviously, the cards have got their own meanings in their own right, all 78 of them. But you can sort of interpret them. Okay, why am I getting this card in this particular spread, in this particular question? What's going on in my life? And I found when I've read the tarot, it always seems to something, there'd always be at least one card in a spread that always connects with me. And I have to sit back and go, whoa, wow, it's come up. That's exactly it. There it is.
Speaking to me, that card.
Absolutely, yeah. There's always at least one. Most of the time it's a lot more depending on the size of the spread, obviously. But yeah, it just always resonates. In every spread there's at least one. And that's what I love about it. It's almost like a friend saying, how you doing? You okay? Let me show you how you can resolve this situation, for example. That's how I see the tarot. And I absolutely love it as well. It's really fascinating.
Yeah. That's interesting. Again, that's a new thing that I know diddly about tarot. And it's interesting because it's almost like being able to interpret themes of your life.
Mm.
It's another way of like auditing and looking at your life and going, you know, what's going on? Like really getting a bird's eye view on things.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I've always asked the tarot for help when I'm in crisis points. And most of the time it gives me some good pointers to say, okay, there's going to be someone in your life who is maybe not quite right for you, for example, just pulling a scenario out of the air.
Yeah.
This is an action you can take. That's the kind of relationship I have with my decks.
Interesting. Like for me, like, I don't know, I guess I'm going to share something now. I don't know why.
Share away.
Throw it out there. Like, before I did therapy, because like, I know, naturally, you want to help yourself, like, when you're in, no one wants to be, like, suicidal, like, you know, or whatever. Mm. So, like, I used to, I was really, like, into, like, Buddhism and, like, sort of Eastern philosophies and culture. So, like, I used to do this thing called, like, aligning your, like, chakras.
Yes, yeah.
And, like, that really helped, because each chakra has got, like, an emotion associated with it.
It has, you're right, yeah.
So, it was a way of me interpreting and dealing with my emotions. And I always felt really cleansed and, like, like, you know, that feeling of, like, being relaxed with yourself.
Yeah.
Afterwards.
That's exactly it. The tarot gives me the same sort of feeling. Obviously, it's quite an emotional thing to go into, but afterwards it's just great. It's such a great feeling, so blissful.
Yeah, well, appreciate you sharing. It's been an amazing episode. you shared some really like important things, I feel, like from a poetry point of view and, you know, through like an emotional and mental health point of view.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Dan. It's been an absolute blast.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it. And also, like I say, thank you for sorting out this room.
Not
as well.
A problem. Anytime.
Yeah. And so that's been the episode for today, guys. This has been Know Yourself with Dan Burton and Dan Udell.
Double Dans.
Until next time, guys. Peace out.